The Great Lakes, Superior, Michigan, Huron, Erie, and Ontario. As I said earlier, you know, cover up one-fifth of the world's, or make up for one-fifth of the world's fresh water that we have. And just to give you an idea of how much water that would be, it's 94,000 square miles. And together, they hold an estimated 6 quadrillion gallons of water. 6 quadrillion. What the hell's a quadrillion, anyways? Anybody know that one? Joe, you're into numbers and stuff.
Oh, don't math questions this early in the morning or just
quadrillion.
I'll Google it. Just hold on.
Anyway, that's like I said before. It's 20% of the world's surface freshwater, and of course that being the largest freshwater surface on the planet. Now the system is a vast resource of water supply, providing drinking water for more than 84 million people in North America. So that is huge. But these Great Lakes and the drinking water could become hazardous with the development of harmful algal bloom, or algal bloom, I guess. We'll find out in a minute. Yeah, sure. We're going to now talk with Dr. Gabriel Filippelli. He is the director at the Center of Urban Health and professor at the Department of Earth Science at the Purdue School of Science in North Battleford, Indiana. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. First of all, pronunciation on algal. Algal?
Algal, you got it right. Algal blooms, harmful wow. Algal blooms, or HABs.
Okay, and this is algae, right? This is what we call algae?
That's right. You know, there's algae in a lot of water, but when you get these dense mats of green, yucky algae that not only are problematic themselves, but they also start producing toxins, then that becomes a real problem.
Okay, first of all, tell us about the type of research that you're actually doing then.
Yeah, sure. One of the things I look at is how climate change across the Midwest is impacting water quality and then human health. And so we've been able to work with the Purdue climate models, where they've been able to take, instead of like these global climate models, they've actually downsized them. So you can tell the difference between climate, the future of climate in northern Indiana, for example, versus southern Indiana. And that becomes really powerful. Of course, because northern Indiana is right next to the Great Lakes, so you care right about that, and southern Indiana drains down to the Mississippi.
It can be very concerning, but we've had algae in our freshwater, or algal blooms, for years, and I want to talk to you about that. But can you sit tight with us for a couple of minutes? I do have to take a quick break, Gabriel, and there's so many more questions we have to ask you. So if you could bear with us for a moment, thank you. We'll just take a quick break. More journal after this. Don't you dare go away.
From the streets of Toronto to the backwoods of Bancroft, here's your Moose Country Minute with Mark Bonikoski.
With the warmer weather here, it would be awful tempting to load up the kids and the family dog and head to the cottage. But don't, even if you get the go-ahead to go. Senior health officials in the province have been stressing how important it is that we don't head north until the COVID-19 pandemic has passed. Not slowed down, but passed. Judging by my many years living on the shores of Baptiste Lake near Bancroft, I know the impact that just a normal summer influx of cottagers had on the local hospital. There is normally only one nurse in triage and one doctor in ER, and he or she is usually an import from Ottawa because local doctors are just too overwhelmed by their own patient rosters to take rotation in a busy ER situation. A twisted ankle or a fishing hook jammed into a thumb can result in hours of wait until your turn comes around. Now throw COVID-19 into the mix, and no rural hospital can handle the demand if something goes wrong. They simply just can't. Besides, look at it this way. The black flies will likely be out in full force and have you trapped in the cottage to avoid being eaten alive the moment you step outdoors. Yes, there are repellents if you buy the ones containing DEET, but do you really want to go through all that just to show your defiance? I tell you what, the younger kids won't thank you. They'll wonder instead why you're torturing them with all these flies. So do yourself a favor. Stay home, be well, and be safe. You can thank me later. For Outdoor Journal Radio, I'm Mark Ponikoski.
Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal on Sportsnet 590. The fan of Angela Biola. He is Joseph Gorskowski and Derek Randell. The trio. We will shepherd you through the outdoors on this wonderful weekend. It is a beautiful weekend. It doesn't mean you can't go outside, by the way. Mark is not saying don't leave your home. He's just saying, you know what? If you don't have to, don't go to the cottage or the summer home. That's all. But get outside. Go for a walk. Go to a local park. I don't know. Not Bellwood, by the way. Just so we can get it straight. Just go get some fresh air. On the line with us is Dr. Gabriel. Speaking of fresh air, we're going to talk about fresh water. Dr. Gabriel Filippelli. I hope I got that right. Director at the Center for Urban Health in Department of Earth Science at Purdue School of Science, North Battleford, Indiana, USA. Way too many words and names for me to go through this morning. Doctor, before we left, we were talking about this algae and algae bloom. And I had said to you, we get it quite often on our inland lakes, especially midsummer when the temperatures are really high. It's not unusual, and not just here in this part of Canada, Ontario, but all across the country. We've been on location shoots during the summer where the lakes are just covered in this stuff. Is this the same stuff you're talking about studying?
No, that's right. We have there has always been algae around, like I mentioned. And it's largely fueled by natural processes, right? Algae is a natural organism, but it's increased when there's humans interacting with it. So we have a tendency with our sewage systems or our farm fields to release a fair amount of the nutrients, the phosphorus and nitrogen, these things that the algae loves to gnaw on and grow on. And the thing with algae is you have one algal cell today, you'll have two tomorrow, you'll have four the next day, and you'll have 16 the next day. So these blooms are just expressions of these algae just proliferating really, really quickly. But the key difference, I think, has been over the last 15 years or so, these algae, like you mentioned, that have been around for a long time, they've been starting to secrete toxins. They're neurotoxins. Wow. We don't exactly know why, but they've gone from being just a nuisance to actually being dangerous.
Like, explain toxins to me, because when I hear the word toxins, I'm thinking poison and death and, carcinogenics and all that stuff.
That's right. All of that. So these are neurotoxins. So they affect your nervous system. And there are a couple different kinds. It's really odd. These algae have had the capability to make them. In other words, they've had the genetic machinery, but they really haven't bothered to do that until about the last 15 years. We think it's related largely to climate change. Not exactly sure why. But the problem is this has come up more and more often when pets, you have dogs or go swimming with you in the water. Dogs are not, they drink a tremendous amount of the lake water. We've had several dog deaths because of this. So it shuts down their kidneys.
Wow.
And so it's become an issue for that reason. But where it really blew up was in the city of Toledo, Ohio, several years ago, where they had one of these harmful algal blooms centered right over their only water intake for the entire city. So they could suck in the water just fine, but it not only did it have this algae, so it's normally you'd say, well, just boil it and you'll be safe. Well, in this case, this neurotoxin gets released when you boil it. So not only could you not boil it, you couldn't drink it, right? So for 3 days, they were without any water in their taps.
Wow. That is insanity. I'm going to make an assumption. You guys are working on, first of all, figuring out how to prevent this from happening, but I'm also going to assume that somebody's working on a solution for this.
That's right. We can't, like in a small reservoir, you can treat the water itself. So there's things called algicides. So they kill algae. And so you can knock out a bloom that way. But obviously in a Great Lake, for example, you can't. It's just too vast. And the Great Lakes are, drinking water supply for tens of millions of people around them. And so we know what's causing them to proliferate a lot now, which is this, what I mentioned earlier, excess nutrients are coming from our sewage systems and from farm fields. But it's gotten, we had it under control until about 5 to 8 years ago because of laws, right? You know, you control how much, how right. farmers fertilize their fields and so forth. But climate change has caused a really unnerving reverse in that improvement, because we've had experienced tremendous spring rainfall events. So spring and summer. So these extreme rainfall events have already gone up by about 16 to 20%, which means that when it rains a lot in a lot of these cities, their sewage system doesn't go to the water treatment plant. It actually dumps right into the water, which then goes into the lake, wow. which then feeds it with all of our own human waste nutrients, and these algae go crazy.
Do we not have, and you just briefly mentioned it, laws in place to prevent the dumping of all of these products that may lead to algae? The Clean Water Act, do we not have something in place that's supposed to be taking care of all this right now?
We do, but it's been overwhelmed by this change in climate. And so, for example, even some of our cities, northeastern Indiana, the city of South Bend, Indiana, where the University of Notre Dame is, they've experienced two different 500-year-plus floods in the last several years, which means that statistically they're not supposed to happen that often. But in fact, they're happening more and more often. And so their water infrastructure was based on the old rainfall projections, right? So okay. they had adequate protections based on the Clean Water Act, but now they're being overwhelmed. So we have to adjust all of our projections with anything we build from now to the future to get control over that sewage part. And farmers might actually have to back off on fertilizer application or only apply limit application near any waterway. They already do that, but we might have to get even more strict.
Okay, now you're going to scare the hell out of me here in a minute, because, you know, I'm like every other citizen on this planet. We just naturally assume that our, you know, municipal officials, the cities, the towns, the urban centers, and even rural areas that we live in, are treating our water so that, you know, they're removing all of the potential hazards in that drinking water, including toxins. But now you're kind of making me feel that maybe that's not the case in this particular area?
Well, I think that they're trying, but it's almost like climate has outpaced regulation in this case. So, yes, they're trying, but it's they're going a little slow. And an example is our own water infrastructure in our city. We've had all these sewage problems for quite a long time because we have an old, archaic sewage system. They've completely rebuilt it, and it's about 1 year away from completion, but they rebuilt it to the rainfall projections from the late 1990s, just because that's when they agreed contractually to do it. So, and which allowed a certain amount of times where sewage would go in the waterways, not much, but a certain amount. Now it looks like we've blown past those projections, and so we're likely going to have 2 to 3 times as much sewage going in the waterways. So it's almost like we're always behind in some of these regulations.
Wow. Now, I'm not making this comment to try to make myself sound smart, okay, but I recently wrote a blog about zooplankton and phytoplankton. And I learned a little bit about how those things work. Now, does zooplankton not feed on most algae?
Zooplankton do feed on algae, yeah. You got that exactly right. But the problem is that these algae, so not only do they grow really quickly, a lot faster than zooplankton can grow, you know what I mean, in terms of reproduction. Wow. But also when the zooplankton eat them, they also excrete these waste products like we do. And the algae, the waste algae goes down to the bottom of the lake, and they start turning the lake anoxic. So they start stripping oxygen out of the water, which causes an additional problem. I'm sure you have a lot of anglers there and among your listening audience, and who knows that, you know, you need oxygen. Fish need oxygen to live.
Right.
And so if you have these big blooms, they strip oxygen, especially out of small lakes.
So when we see the green scum, the algae coating on the surface of a lake, it's actually depleting the oxygen level from the surface of that particular lake.
Well, it's when they get consumed or they die and fall to the bottom, it consumes it from the bottom of the lake. Yeah, it's zooplankton chew it up, and that becomes a real problem.
Wow. This is insanity. Holy mackerel. So how's it looking? What's our future look like? What's going to happen?
So I'm not a gloom and doom person. I'm just, I think we've been, but we have, I think, celebrated a lot of our, for example, you mentioned the Clean Water Act. We celebrated our successes for quite a while, rightfully so, in terms of regulating some of these things. But we need to look back on all that. And we've done it before. The Great Lakes used to be, Lake Erie used to be a cesspool, right? It was yeah. terrible. Yeah. And it's struggled its way back up into being a healthy lake. It's going backwards again over the last 5 to 8 years. So we need to take that as just a warning call that reminds us, oh, we can do this. We can clean up the lakes. But we have to use science to help inform us on how to do that. And I'm sure we can. It's just we have to look back on our lakes. You know, water's so precious, as you know. And we have to treat it as that.
Definitely a concern, and it's something that's very visible too. It's not an attractive thing to start with. So when you go on a lake to do that weekend of fishing and it's covered in algae bloom, man, it doesn't make for a very pleasant outing for sure. And now we find out that it actually could be very harmful to our drinking water. So not the best thing in the world for sure, but keep us informed on how we make out on this.
Happy to do so. Yeah.
Thank you, Doctor. Thanks for joining us. Dr. Gabriel Filippelli, Director at the Center for Urban Health, Department of Earth Science at Purdue School of Science, North Blackford, Indiana. Wow, that's scary stuff, isn't it? Wild. Huh. All right, let's move on to our next guest. Who knew? I didn't know. I just thought it was bad for fishing. Now I'm told it was bad for drinking too. I think he was pretty impressed with the fact that I knew that zooplankton fed on it. So that was a good move on my part.